Welcome to the VIP Jazzwall Report, the report that asks insightful questions and gets revealing answers. We're blessed to live in a country where our dreams can become reality and hard work never fails. Every American is a secret entrepreneur and every American has a dream of financial success. However, if you take the daring journey towards exploiting capitalism, and those who do need more than just a great idea, they need great advisors and guidance to manage the dangers they face on this journey of entrepreneurship. Our guest today is Hannah Hassel Kelchner, who is famously known as the no-nonsense lawyer and is America's legal landmine expert with over 30 years of experience. Her fame reached the White House when one of her cases was personally decided by President Reagan. Hannah shares with us certain strategies that allow one to spend more time growing the business rather than defending it in court. Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you, Vip. It's good to be here.
I want to start with that famous aha moment one has when one feels that they've just thought of the next big thing. If one thinks it's valuable, what should they do?
Well, that's an exciting time. And if somebody thinks they have a business idea and they start jotting notes down, my suggestion would be to put it in a file and mark it confidential, because you want to start protecting your information as soon as you can. And if you happen to be working with a friend of yours who is going to help you launch the business, then you should probably get a founder's agreement in place to at least start getting an idea of who's going to be responsible for what. It can be revised over time, but it helps manage expectations. And that's so critical in those early stages of any business.
So you're saying you need to protect the idea before the launch. You can even do that.
Oh, yes, because sometimes there could be a long ramp-up time before you actually launch. There's a lot of things that have to get ready. Some strategies have to be developed. You have to figure out what it is you're selling, how you're going to find your customers, how you're going to get the message out. All of those things need to be identified, and that's part of the business plan. And it may be very loose in terms of the structure. It doesn't have to be this 100-page document, but it's all part of getting started.
And what are the ways of protecting the business once you do set up business?
Well, certainly intellectual property plays an important role. But as far as the business entity itself, there's really three basic ways in order to protect your business as an entity. Mm-hmm. And one, the simplest, is the proprietorship. You know, you print some business cards, you slap a magnet with your phone number on the door of your car. You're in business. Woohoo! The thing is, you are in business, and it's you on the line and all of your personal resources and assets, which if you have a family, puts them at risk too, because it means that if there is a dispute, whoever is disputing, you know, but you are the business. That means they can reach your bank accounts, they could reach your home, they could reach your car, all of your personal assets.
So you're exposing all your personal assets in all of this.
Exactly.
But in terms of intellectual property, how can you protect it? Because, you know, you hear the words patent, you hear the words copyright. What are the various ways of protecting intellectual property?
Well, intellectual property is a term that's a broad umbrella term, and it covers four separate types of property.
Mm-hmm.
If we go from the easiest to establish and actually also the least costly,
right,
to the most expensive, you would start with trade secrets. So trade secrets are things like your secret sauce, your special process for doing something that nobody else knows. Think Coca-Cola formula, Colonel Sanders recipe, things of that nature. And what you do is you keep it confidential. You keep it locked with limited access to anybody who, you know, thinks they need to know about it. The companies, they only parse out pieces of a formula. Very few people know the entire formula. So you keep it simple and you keep it locked up. That's not hard to do. If you need to share it with somebody else, that's what confidentiality agreements are for. And the basics, we all learned on the playground when we were 5 years old. If you wanted to tell a secret, what'd you do? First thing you said is make sure you promise not to tell. They said yes, and then you leaned over into their ear, cupped your hands over it, and then whispered. You did that so nobody else would hear. And the grown-up version in business is called a confidentiality agreement.
And where do you get the wording for the confidentiality agreement?
Well, there's lots of sources. I would certainly recommend having a counsel draft a standard form for you that fits your business and the type of information you're trying to protect. There's also online resources that would then need to be tailored for your specific situation.
Okay, so we have trade secrets. What about trademarks?
Yes. Trademarks? Well, actually, there's another easier version of something else right in between before you get to trademarks, mm-hmm. and that's called copyrights.
Okay.
And copyrights protect works of authorship, literary works, music, video, motion picture, that type of thing. And those are very easy to create in terms of protecting your legal rights, because the second they are in a fixed, tangible form, the second you hit send, save on your computer,
mm-hmm.
it's protected. Now, if you need to sue somebody because you think they violated your copyright, well, before you can do that, you need to register it. And that process is, again, pretty simple. It's one you don't need a lawyer for. You can actually do yourself. You can go to copyright.gov, G-O-V.
Right.
And there's all their registration information, and it's less than $100 for most of them. So pretty simple to do, and copyrights last a long time. So trademarks are more complicated, but they have tremendous, tremendous value. They basically protect your brand platform. It's words, phrases, symbols, like logos. And the application process is a little bit more involved than copyrights. The filing fees alone are just a little under $100. But the application prep is where you really want to get some professional help. The process itself takes maybe a year, year and a half, but they're incredibly powerful. And we see examples of that every day. McDonald's is a very common example. McRib, McCafe, McNuggets. You know, if you come out with the McVit burger, I guarantee you, you're going to be in McTrouble. That's just the way it is. And some of them, you know, you're creating value and an asset whenever you exercise your intellectual property rights.
But how long would it take you to get a trademark?
A trademark process from beginning to end is typically a year, year and a half.
Do you have to be in business?
Do you have to be in business? Well, you don't necessarily have to have your entity. You know, let's say you want to trademark something. You know, you could do it, get it in your individual name, and then later when you have your entity established, transfer it over. But one thing you do need to do before you can get a trademark is you need to use it in interstate commerce.
So you need to be physically trading?
In some form.
In some form, okay.
In some form. And that can also be on the Internet.
Right.
But it's powerful. It doesn't even mean that your business has to be successful. Back in the dot-com boom, some people may remember pets.com. You know, with Big Sweetheart, and they had this wonderful, funny, sarcastic little sock puppet as their logo. It was black and white, little button eyes. And even though the business went belly up, mm-hmm. that sock puppet, because it was trademarked, ultimately sold for $125,000. Somebody got those trademark rights. So you are creating an asset. You are adding to the value of your business, which is important for attracting investors and later on down the road if you want to sell your business. So it's a good practice. And then the last type of intellectual property is patents, mm-hmm. which is the most complex, the most costly to put in place. It can take longer than any of the other forms, and it has a fixed life. It's 20 years from the date of filing. And that's something you definitely can't do by yourself, and you need to get some professional guidance.
Right. So our listeners need to know that even though while this is time-consuming and to a certain extent expensive, they're actually all assets for your business. They actually increase the value of your business. Am I right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the pharmaceutical companies are a great example of organizations that fight very hard for their patent protection, because that's what keeps their product from going generic.
And you would recommend that these sort of assets need to be included in part of every business plan, too.
I would certainly suggest that people evaluate how these forms of intellectual property can help enhance the value of their business.
Now, it's funny, you know, because a lot of my friends are in business. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're entrepreneurs. But they view accountants as their advisors and regard lawyers as an expense burden. Why is that perception, you know, to a certain extent wrong? And how should they be viewing their lawyer?
Well, maybe they just don't have the right lawyer. That could be. I understand the hesitancy. And some of it, you know, could be the lawyer that they're working with. But I think on the other hand, if they find the right person, they can be a tremendous asset in terms of an advisor from a strategic point of view to say, here is the lay of the land, and here are where potential legal landmines are, and here is where you can actually use the law, sort of like a judo flip, to help move your business forward that much faster, that much safer, in a way that makes you more competitive. And that's the beauty of intellectual property, because the one unifying theme between trade secrets, copyrights, trademarks, and patents is once you own one of these, mm-hmm. you have the power to exclude other people from using that asset without your permission.
Then how do you find a good lawyer?
How do you find a good lawyer?
you get restaurant reviews.
Yes, yes. There are some online directories that do have some reviews out there.
Right.
Martindale.com is on the internet, mm-hmm. and ChambersandPartners.com is on the internet. Your local bar association could be a source of referral. And then one of my favorites is people whose opinions you trust that are in business,
right.
Ask them. And also find out what that lawyer's specialty was. Someone might have done a great real estate deal for them, but they're real estate lawyers. They may not be intellectual property lawyers, or nobody else in their firm does intellectual property. So you do want to ask questions and drill down. And then once you have a few names, I'd also suggest interviewing them to see what the chemistry is like. Do you like this person? Do you feel you can trust them? Will they return your phone calls? What are the billing practices? All those types of things are important to ask.
There's also a point of view where, some people, obviously, in any business, you need to focus on the bottom line, and not just through revenue, but through expenses. You can actually use online resources like LegalZoom and Rocket Lawyer. Now, someone like you, what would you say to that?
Well, I think that it's important to always keep an eye on your bottom line. I would also caution that the cheapest solution is not always the least expensive. And while there are resources like that available, mm-hmm. recognize what their limitations are. It might work for certain things. It might not work for others. So go in with eyes open, buyer beware.
There's also a perception from a lot of my friends who are in business that they think business insurance covers legal issues and fees. Is this a misunderstanding?
that's so interesting. I think there's a misconception about business insurance, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to what kinds of legal fees it covers. And, insurance policies, there's all different products that are available. And so if somebody has that type of a program as part of the risk management plan, I would really encourage them to read their policy to see what's covered and what's excluded. Because there is no one-size-fits-all policy that lets you just assume all your legal matters are taken care of. And I think that the easiest way to explain that is by comparing it to medical insurance. Do you go to your medical insurer for medical advice? Do you have dental coverage and say, I don't need to brush my teeth anymore because I have dental coverage? I don't think we dream of doing something like that. But yet when it comes to legal matters, yeah. there's this false sense of security that comes with, I have legal insurance, And then let's take it one step further. What happens when you start to make a lot of claims under any insurance policy? What does that do for your bottom line? Your premiums are going to go up, or maybe they will drop you altogether. You don't have to insure you if you're a bad risk. So ultimately, it still comes down to, if you're going to be a good steward of your business, to protect your shareholders, or if your proprietorship, your family, then it really pays to become more aware and more well-rounded about all of the leadership responsibilities that come with running a business.
What I'm getting from you is that use legal advice, use a lawyer for guarding yourself proactively and not reactively.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And every day you could pick up the newspaper and find headlines where people have let things spiral out of control, before taking action. At that point, they have no choice because they've been dragged into court. All courts do is insist on accountability. That's what the whole process is about. And at that point, you may not have as many options available to you as if you're starting out in the beginning saying, okay, what could happen here? How do I protect myself? I'm not saying zero risk. I'm saying reasonable risk, because the ones that hurt you the most are the ones you don't see coming, because you've got your head in the sand like an ostrich, and all that does is make your backside a bigger target, and you don't see it coming.
Right.
So, yes, proactive by all means. We do that in other areas of our life, and the law does not need to be intimidating. You don't need to be a lawyer to learn how to ask the right questions.
What are the five things you think every entrepreneur should know?
Well, I think that first and foremost, it's important to create a business that aligns with your core values and to really decide, what does success mean to you? Are you going to be a solopreneur? Are you going to build the next Google empire? What are your strengths? Sometimes people get caught up in expectations that their parents might have imposed on them from a very young age.
Right.
You know, Steve Jobs had a wonderful quote in that graduation speech that's often quoted. He says, time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. And that applies to business, because otherwise your passion will fizzle if it's not truly your passion.
So you're saying create a business that aligns with your core values. Now, when you say core values,
yes,
could you explain that to me?
In terms of your ethics, in terms of your personal strengths, if you are an excellent salesperson and you hate being in the office, then you need to create a business that works and plays to your strengths, and find other people or other resources to help backfill those portions of the business that don't.
Right.
So it really helps to understand, you know, what you're good at, to be honest with yourself, and what's going to make you happy. Because you plan to be in this for the long haul until you can execute your exit strategy. And so once you've identified that, then you can create the proper structure that aligns with your long-term objectives. In other words, the entity, what should it look like? Is it going to be a proprietorship? Is it going to be a partnership, some type of corporation? I mean, if all you want to do is just be in business for yourself and help a small handful of people that afford you the lifestyle that you want, that's fine. That's your definition of success. But if you want to grow something bigger and you want to attract venture capital investment, well, then you're going to need to be a corporation incorporated in the state of Delaware, because that's the kind of thing that they're going to require. So you fine-tune it in terms of what's going to work for you and have all of those things just fall in line like the proper domino.
So there are three entities you can have. You can just be a sole proprietor,
yes,
a partner, or a corporation.
Or a partnership.
What are the risks with each?
Well, the proprietorship we touched on a little bit. Your personal assets are going to be your
risk.
And if you don't have any personal assets, well, then that may not matter to you. Here today, gone tomorrow. But if you've been in the working world any period of time, chances are you may have some bank account, a car, a home, whatever that you want to protect, especially if you have a family, because you want to be able to keep their lifestyle intact. So proprietorship, if you're in a dorm room with two pairs of jeans to your name, that's one thing. The partnership, this is where you're sharing the risk with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
It could be another partner or several partners. That protects you somewhat. But the ultimate form of protection really is a corporate form, and there's several of them. And that really creates a separate legal entity. It's like a legal person sitting over there. That's, you know, this corporation. And all the business is transacted in the name of the corporation. Now, an individual can be a corporation, but it's going to be really incumbent on them to make sure that they don't mix their personal transactions with the business transactions, because then that can be challenged. People say, hey, this is really proprietorship, you know.
Right.
They're dipping into the piggy bank all the time.
What's
and
the
it's
second?
Not salary.
What's the second thing every entrepreneur should know?
Is not to be afraid to protect the value of their business. And we touched a good deal on it in terms of the intellectual property rights, because the one thing about intellectual property is it's not required. The law doesn't require you to get patents or trademarks or any of those types of things. This is about you understanding what your rights are and also your duties, so that you can take full advantage of these resources that are there in order to protect and to grow their business. And part of knowing what that is really the third thing, and that's to stay curious, to keep educating yourself, to ask questions, and to develop a winning approach to these types of issues. Because when you do that, you start to develop more confidence, and you also it makes you savvier and more sophisticated as a business person, which makes it easier to deal with large entities or people that have been in business longer than you have. You know, so it's important to recognize that the law is part of a business leadership role and in protecting your business from lawsuits.
So it's always about knowing your environment, knowing your competition, knowing your customer, knowing the best supplier. Is that pretty much what we're talking about?
That is what we're talking about, but also in terms of what's your relationship with each of those, the customer, the supplier, the vendor. Are there contracts in place? You know, contracts are another one of these asset-building tools because this is not you on the phone with somebody. You know, here is a document that creates a legal obligation between your business entity and that third party, which means if you can no longer stay in your role, either you're bringing somebody else in because you're planning on moving on to another venture or retiring, or you're selling the business, those contracts stay with the business, so they have a value. So it's recognizing, you know, what tools are available, using them properly, and that it is part of your leadership role in business. That's probably one of the least understood ones.
Yeah, it is. And for people who are just entering the business world, are there business forums that are, I guess, provided by the government that can help people?
Well, I think there are some programs that might be available through the Small Business Administration, which is a government entity. But another program which is available is SCORE, S-C-O-R-E, which is a core of retired executives that many of them volunteer their time. And their mission is to help make businesses successful, small businesses, startups in particular. And so they do provide certain counseling services, and there are resources for SCORE throughout the country. So there may be a local office where you live.
Right.
And the other thing is, too, is your state, your Secretary of State. You know, when you go to, like, register or to incorporate, you have to file in a state. And, you know, from a state perspective, a government perspective, a new business is an opportunity for revenue, for tax base. So they have an interest in wanting you to be successful. And they may have certain startup packages of information that are available that you might be able to get free online that can help you at least start thinking about some of these important issues.
What about the fourth and fifth things an entrepreneur needs to know?
Well, the fourth thing every entrepreneur needs to know is who owns the playground, and that every legitimate business operates on a legal playing field. And so it is important to understand where the file lines are. And, you know, it's a huge field, but you don't want to step on the foul line and you don't want to cross it because it could be very expensive, especially if it's a large corporation that is suing you for some reason because you picked the wrong name and it's close to their trademark. You know, that happened to a woman about 2 years ago. It made a lot of headlines. You may just be familiar with the beauty care line Wella. They make hair care products and skin care products.
Yep.
They're probably bigger in Europe than here, but they're part of the Procter & Gamble empire. Well, this woman has a teenage daughter who was having problems with her skin, as many teenagers do. And so she decided to come up with a line of skin care products. And her daughter, she named it after her daughter, whose name is Willa. So one letter difference between Willa and Wella. And Wella didn't take that very well. They sued. Now, the case finally settled on the eve of trial, but it cost that entrepreneur $750,000 in legal fees because she wanted to protect herself. She wanted that name. She wanted to keep it. Now, they came to a settlement, which is fine, but how many entrepreneurs can afford $750,000 in legal fees? That's on top of all their other operating costs.
So if you were their lawyer, what would you have done?
Well, what I have done? For which side?
No, the spelling, you know.
For the spelling. I think it would have helped if she had done something different with the name.
Right.
But she was very passionate about her business, and she was honoring her daughter. She didn't think that Wella would do something like that, and they did. And they did. The thing is, she could have sidestepped that if she had done something differently with the name. I mean, ultimately, she got her wish. She got to keep the name.
Mm-hmm.
One of the key distinctions is that the products are sold through different channels, because when it comes to trademark infringement, the standard that's used to evaluate is whether there's a likelihood of confusion. In other words, you see two products on the shelf, they look similar, and you grab the wrong one because they knocked you off. And here, apparently, the Wella hair care products are sold through salons, and Willa is not sold through salons. So different channels of distribution.
And the last thing, the fifth point.
Go ahead. The last point is to develop a blueprint to contain legal risk so that it can accelerate your growth instead of slow it down. Because I'm sure that Willa could have used that $750,000 to help build the business instead of try and stay alive.
So it's an ongoing process also.
It is an ongoing process. That's exactly right. And I think that's even where some big companies trip up sometimes. You know, they put compliance programs in place and they've got policies and they're like, okay, woohoo, off we go. We can do what we want now because we've got programs. You know, well, programs are only as good as the people that live by them. And so if the dots aren't connected properly, you know, things fall apart, you know. We see that with compliance to trading. And, you know, look at J.P. Morgan took a huge hit because of what happened in London. Somebody, they have compliance programs, but it kind of got disabled.
Now, you're the founder of Business MO.
Yes, sir.
What is it?
Business MO is a management consulting and leadership training and coaching organization.
Mm-hmm.
And we help organizations develop their blueprints, give them the big picture to be the sounding board so that they can navigate, steer clear, also provide educational programs to the Legal Leverage Academy so that they can educate themselves and become savvier and more sophisticated about the legal risks of their business so they can't be taken advantage of and so they can negotiate from positions of strength.
What are the biggest reasons that you've seen that businesses fail? Because a large percentage do.
There could be lots of reasons. You know, one of the most common ones for entrepreneurs is they get so wrapped up in creating their product that the customer acquisition piece, the marketing, is not as consistent as it should be. And so the people who could really benefit from their goods or services aren't even aware that they're there. And so getting all of those pieces up and running, that whole pipeline identified, established, and working in sync is a challenge, especially if you're doing it alone.
Have you ever seen instances where, because of taking lack of protection, small businesses come out with an idea and the big businesses copy that idea and start delivering it to the market, and as a result, no one goes to the small guy?
Oh, it can happen. People inadvertently give up trade secrets. I mean, one example is in the patent area. This company had done some R&D work, had developed their prototype, and one of their engineers was just so excited. He was on an internet chat room and started telling people, oh, we got XYZ coming out. This is fabulous. And so some of his peers are saying, oh, my goodness, that's impressive. How did you do that? So he had thought he had bragging rights. He starts telling them about, you know, this special way that they found to make this product work. Next thing you know, his company is saying, you know what, we need to do some more testing.
Mm-hmm.
And that testing took more than a year. And in the meantime, all of a sudden, a competitor comes out with the exact same product. Now, how could that happen? It happened in that internet chat room where somebody was sharing confidential information, and because it was confidential, it was not protected by confidentiality. It meant it was public. And when it comes to patents in the United States, if something is made public for more than a year, you lose your right to file a patent. That was not a happy employer or a good performance review, I can assure you.
You have no right of legal recourse in those instances.
No, that was not the smartest thing to do, to be speaking out of school with no protection of confidentiality. He assumed that the patents were applied for. In reality, the company pulled back on those patents because they wanted to do some more testing. So the application was not filed.
So when you're applying for a patent, it doesn't mean you already have it, right?
No. No, it goes through a lengthy examination process. You know, it's not the same like a copyright where it's like, here's my work of authorship. You know, it's mine. With a patent, there's research to be done to make sure that it's not already patented, which is some of the homework you should be doing as a potential patent applicant to begin with, to make sure that your application is going to get some legs, and so that you can distinguish yourself from existing technology that's out there, or how you're improving it or making it better.
But I have seen in certain places, in certain products, when you look at the packaging, it says patent applied for.
Yes.
So that's almost like a safeguard in letting competitors know that you're already ahead of the game.
Correct. And one thing to note is that people that want to slap that on a package because they're being coy, when they really have not applied for a patent,
right,
that in itself is illegal.
That's illegal.
Yeah. So if you've really applied for one and patent is pending, then that's perfectly legit. And you're right. It does give notice to the rest of the world that, hey, we're trying to protect something here. The same way with a trademark. Sometimes you'll see a TM,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes you'll see an R in a circle. And the TM is also one of those preliminary steps where somebody's saying, I'm in the process of establishing a trademark. So just beware. And the R means it's actually a federal registration.
Oh, so once you've submitted your application, it entitles you to put that on your product?
For the patent, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So in a way, it's almost like a developing asset.
Exactly. Exactly. And you're also communicating to the world, we believe there's some exclusivity here, which is why if you're interested in this product or this technology, come with us. We're the leader.
Now, you also co-authored the best-selling book, Champions, Knockout Strategies for Health, Wealth, and Success from Today's Leading Experts. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, I was really delighted when the editors approached me on that particular book because the focus is on leadership. You know, the title does not scream law. And mm-hmm. for me, it is all about business leadership. So, you know, Champions is a wonderful title. It's a great book. I recommend it. Because in my mind, when over the years in dealing with different business leaders and influential decision makers, I found that what really separates the good ones from the great ones, from the real champions, is the champions ask questions. They're constantly learning. They never stop. And that's what makes them such fabulous leaders.
Where can people go to get more information about you and your book?
Well, the book is available at any bookseller, including online, Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And I would welcome, if anybody's interested in more information about what I could do for them, come to nononsenselawyer.com.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, Hannah, and for your wonderful advice.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is it for today. Thank you for listening. Feel free to send in your comments to our Facebook page at facebook.com/Fox News Radio or tweet us at Fox News Radio on Twitter. I'm your host, Vip Jaswal, and keep your ears open for the next airing of the Vip Jaswal Report coming soon.